Hello, my name is Jim Hampton, and welcome to Radio Recall. Today you're going to meet legendary radio programmer Ken Draper, who was responsible for creating Top 40 rocker WCFL in Chicago. You'll hear how WCFL was born, how he went up against the monolithic WLS. He'll talk about all the jocks, Jim Runyon, Joel Sebastian, Dick Williamson, Jim Stagg, Barney Pipp, Ron Britton, and Dick Biondi. About bringing Larry Lujak to Chicago. Plus, he'll talk about WCFL Sound, which was filled with previews, mini-spins, countdowns, Chicken Man, oh, and not to forget those legendary Bloor jingles. All in all, it's an incredible hour with a radio legend who goes on the record for the first time. Ken and I have been close friends since I met him at a radio convention in Atlanta when I was looking for a job. He hired me as production director for WCAR in Detroit, which he was consulting at the time. Ken had just left WCFL and had started a radio consulting company in Los Angeles representing WCAR, WPIX in New York, KFWB in Los Angeles, and so on. Now it's more than 40 years later, and I sat down with Ken to do this interview. So let's begin with Ken Draper as he tells the WCFL story. Ken, what was your analysis of WLS and the Chicago market when you got there?
First of all, I figured that if we just split the audience with WLS, you know, we didn't have to become as dominant as they were at the time I went there. If you went in and said, okay, of the categories of radio in this market, what is the least competitive? The answer is rock and roll. The only station doing it was WLS. But playing pop music, for want of a better word, or personality radio, and so on. You had WGN and WIND. Wally Phillips was a wonderful talent, a dated format, but he was a wonderful talent on the air at WGN in mornings. And he and Howard became incredibly competitive for that morning time. So of all the places you would be looking to find a niche, rock would be it. But frankly, even if that weren't the case, that's what I had just come through from East Cupcake to Oregon to Cleveland, and it would have been the natural thing for me to do.
Bill Reese, WCFL News, standing by for the Jim Runyon Program.
Good morning. I am a rock. Shell is a teapot this morning, and Bill is Abraham Lincoln.
And an island never cries.
Simon and Garfunkel on the Jim Runyon Program as WCFL presents Summer. That's number 4 from the WCFL Top 10 survey.
Review.
The more I see you.
And it's Chris Montez and a summary sound in 5. It's 8 o'clock, Chicago.
This is WCFL News.
Standing by for the Joel Sebastian Program.
Thank you so much, Howie. Back to the sound of hit music we go. Mr. Sinatra entertains. We were strangers in the night. And then a sudden glance, and we were lovers.
Strangers in the night.
Standing by for the Dick Williamson Program.
Hey, and right back to the hit music at WCFL we go. Jan and Dean singing all about that popsicle.
My theater teacher's got me working too hard. Relax after school, sitting out in the yard.
Jim Stagg, Chicago's million-dollar music man, turns that hit spotlight on the music on the move. Come on along. Jim Stagg, Sound 10 Stairway.
Joel, we've got the hottest music in Chicago. Music headed toward that Sound 10, and here is 10.
I don't know why she won't love me, Lord, please tell me why.
DC5 at WCFL, and that's a number 10 song in our Stairway Climb, and hold it.
Originally yours.
WCFL.
WCFL, Twin Spin.
We got two for the price of one here on the Jim Stagg Program, step number 9.
I know you want to leave.
Standing by for the Ron Britton Program.
Look out! Look out!
Alive from Chicago.
The sun is rising on WCFL.
Exclusively yours on WCFL.
We're the station that turns you on.
WCFL.
Here's Jim. Now, here's Ron.
Ron. You know it.
Ron.
Ron. Hey.
Woohoo.
Brittoni.
Ron.
Ron Brittoni.
Banana?
Thank you for that nice warm round of sincere applause, and I certainly appreciate it most sincerely.
Hey there, Georgie girl.
Standing by for the Barney Pip program.
WCFL.
7 minutes before midnight at WCFL. Hello to Zeppy out there and Butch, and she wanted past, present, and future. Hi to Karen and Judy and Gary and Danny and Jimmy and Cheryl and Barry and Chris and Roger and Michelle.
In 1965, when you arrived at WCFL, your choice was personality radio versus a more music, more often format. How come?
Some of that was just ignorance on my part. And also, this was 65, so the transition away from personalities. I mean, Dick Biondi wasn't your tight and bright, no-name disc jockey. He was a heavy personality, and he was playing rock music. But compared to today, I mean, 90% of today's rockers, you could... Forgive me, but you could take that voice out and put it in another station and no one would know the difference. These are not personalities. They're just voices. Dick Biondi, I mean, it wasn't that way. And a lot of radio in those days, rock radio, wasn't that way either. They still hadn't totally transitioned out of the personality. Rock versus Titan and no talk and no production and short jingles.
When you listened to WCFL, it seemed like there were no limitations to what might happen next.
To tell you the truth, WCFL was so easy in some ways because there were no limitations. There were no Westinghouse large corporation limitations. I, to be honest with you, could do anything I wanted to do. No one ever approved salaries I paid people. I didn't have to go to someone and say, we want to pay Joel Sebastian $60,000 a year. I just paid him that and sent it in. And I had a wonderful general manager. Later I became general manager. The general manager at the time, Tom Haviland, was just a terrific, supportive guy. I mean, he'd been through the union wars and all of that entails over the years. And he was really supportive and a really good guy to the end with me. And he was just wonderful. Even when I replaced him, he was wonderful. And when I did replace him, he was such a great guy. I made sure that he was promoted to television so that I wouldn't have taken Tom's job otherwise. That's how good he was. And so when I went to CFL, there were no impediments. No one telling me how many people I could hire. They didn't say, you know, if we had disc jockeys that went from 6 in the morning to noon, we could save. Nobody doing that kind of thing to me. Or if I wanted to put a chicken man on the air, nobody came. I'd have to go to someone for approval. It was absolutely... So I believe that Chicago was a platform for things that had been inside of me for 8 years in terms of ideas and the way I envisioned a really great radio station. And it didn't have anything to do, I admit, for better or for worse, with wherever the market was at that time. I did not say to myself, oh, wow, we've got to tighten it up. It just never... I wanted the same thing. I wanted a radio station where when you heard it, you could not take it anywhere else. It was Chicago.
Here is love in your ear. WCFL.
WCFL. Something now happened to Chicago. WCFL. Designed with love for the new Chicago. WCFL. Here is love in your ear. WCFL.
Talking with Ken Draper on Radio Recall about WCFL. I think there was a point back then when some radio competitors felt the station was too cluttered.
The time where we felt it the worst was when we began to grow in the numbers and they were selling, and so the advertising was increasing. And we were faced with a decision. Too many ads, and I wasn't going to go to Ron Britton and say, shut up. That was why I had him there. I wasn't going to go to Jim Runyon or take off Trooper 36, 21, 36, take her off of the air because she consumed 45 seconds of time doing traffic reports.
Hello, traffic. I'm 36, 24, 36.
My name is Sabu. If you are playing Kick the Can and your elephant wants to join you, boy, I wouldn't let him do it at all.
The Kennedy northbound is slowing at Division. Southbound Kennedy is heavy from Nagel through the junction with a heavy pace through the downtown area.
If he misses that can and hits you, you're gonna know it.
The Edens northbound is steady. Southbound Edens is rough from Pratt through the junction. Lakeshore Drive northbound is slowing at 23rd. This is Trooper 362436. WCFL safe driving time is 7:44. Oh, my God.
How about that, folks? A grown woman, too. Yes, it is. It's 16 minutes in delay. Why don't you say it that way? Is that easier to you?
No.
And so we got trapped. And that's what brought about mini spins, you know, to create the illusion of more music. We did things called mini spins where we took three records and actually edited them into one record. So in all of this production and this sound, it seemed like there was more music going on than there really was.
Stand by for lunch. In quick review for you, WCFL Capsule Countdown on Chicago 10. Ooh, that.
Standing by and holding for the number one sound around Chicago town.
Oh, somebody calls and says, hey, are you a Purvis fan, ma'am? I say, certainly. Blues band are working on you. They're the Rolling Stones, be in town on the 10.
By the time you hear preview before the news, and so there I get a piece of a record, I move into news, which moves quickly. I come out of there into a song. Before long, I have a mini spin, and you keep going, and it sounds like a lot of music going on. But that's where we really felt the not as tight. Actually, we were pretty tight. It wasn't that. We just didn't have enough time for the music when we began to sell. We got successful and began to sell advertising, so it was a problem.
WCFL, WCFL.
You did some really over-the-top events that involved the WCFL jocks. For example, in 1966, you did the Jim Stagg March for Muscular Dystrophy. This was a 50-mile march, and I understand over 63,000 people participated.
We did the first march in Cleveland, and we did it for Danny Thomas in Cleveland. But it's another example. It didn't occur to me that we would be interrupting the play or the tightness of the station to have Jim walk 50 miles for muscular dystrophy with all of the jocks plugging in periodically. And this, I mean, it's a sizable task. Mary Sweeney was a wonderful promotion director for us. And the task of getting permits from all of those cities that you have to march through and doing all of that, and the doctors and the insurance and the things that you do to make that thing happen. But by the time you start out in wherever we began, Skokie or somewhere, and you wind up in downtown with thousands of people trailing this parade, man, you can't beat it. And on the air, you have periodically Jim would have to stop after a while to get his, because blisters and things develop. You have to stop because the doctor's attending to you. Besides that, the idea is that you only move when people are calling in. And that's the way it works. I'll march as long as the phones are ringing, you know. So periodically, you have that pause while you're rejuvenating the phones. But, you know, I believe that belongs. It belongs in radio. I don't get it. And I'm not clear on why that isn't. Why that, even today.
Listen to the lake.
Listen to the trees.
WCFL. Spread your fingers out.
Listen to the breeze.
WCFL. Listen to the loop. Listen to the drive.
Listen to Chicago.
Coming to your life. WCFL. The heart of Chicago.
And another huge idea that was copied all over the country was Think Green.
Yeah. This was a big successful promotion. We had a snowstorm in Chicago that started in October, and there was snow on the ground until April that year. And there, the snow was so deep that you could just see the top of our news cruiser in one shot that we actually used it on the cover of a news album that we put out. And so that's where Think Green came from. Everybody was snowed in. It was miserable. It was terrible. So we did the Think Green process. If we call you and you say Think Green, you're in. But it was all of the other stuff. They had doodle pads and stickies and all kinds of stuff that you could get that had Think Green on it, put by your telephone to remind you to say Think Green and so on. And you could see the result of this promotion in this year of the storm in the ratings. You'd see it jump.
WCFL had a very unique logo artistically. How did that come about?
A guy who loved CFL came in the early going. He was an artist, a graphics guy. And he said, we'd like to do a logo for you. And he said, we've already done some testing. And so on, and he said, and he had already had a presentation, right? He just walked in, and it knocked me out. The idea, once again, that we were doing something different, where we actually, all the call letters were in a row. He had them set up so that they were in a box, WC on top and FL on the bottom. But it was that kind of creativity, I think, was the mark of that station. That's the birth of Chicken Man was the result of that kind of thing.
Chicken Man!
He's everywhere!
So let's talk about Chicken Man. It was probably the most successful program feature ever heard on the radio.
It came out of the Batman phase in our social history. And Batman was an ABC product, and WLS was owned by ABC. So they weren't actually doing Chicken Man-like things on the air, but they had access to any promotional thing. They could give away what they wanted to. And so there was a lot of Batman showing up in some form or the other on WLS. And I wanted something to compete with that. And so I called Dick Orkin in, and I said to him, I'd like you to give me six similar satirical things to Batman, one for each show. The original idea was that each jock would have their own little cartoon segment. And Dick came back with six of them. And one of them was Chicken Man. And it was obvious instantly. I mean, it didn't require any discussion. He said, oh, wow, man, that's funny. That's really great. And so he went out and produced it. And it was an instant success. It wasn't for all of the people who would say, oh, man, 2.5 minutes. Are you kidding me? I mean, you can't do that on radio. It's tight and bright. No one ever called and said, you know, the trouble with Chicken Man is it's too long. No one, not a soul. You know, I was getting calls, which became my demise at WCFL, from people who wanted to market it nationally. And so we made an agreement, and it ultimately showed up in 361 markets and a couple of international. It was translated into another language in a couple of other countries. It was a phenomenon. And Dick and Jane Runyon later, Jane Roberts at the time, and Jim Runyon were terrific. And this is unforgivable. I should forget his name, but Mike, the engineer who worked on it, who came from Cleveland, Mike King. Yeah, he was great. And I know that you Jim can appreciate it. I mean, he had some of the abilities that you have. You know, ability to cut a half a note out here and do that kind of thing. And also, in the end, they would go in and produce the show. In the end, it would just go to Mike, and he had to clean it up and make it. Make the show work. So all of those people were involved in that. But not a single jock came to me, Barney Pipp or Ron Britton, they didn't come and say, hey, man, you're taking 2.5 minutes every out of my show. No way, not a soul. I mean, it was people, this is the way those folks envisioned the station and their part in it. And then there were calls for Chicken Man to be a guest. And so we went to a place called Finders, run by Barry Stone, who became a friend of ours. Fascinating guy, and you could go to him. That's what his company was. Come tell me what you want, I'll find it for you. And he found his Chicken Man outfit. And so Dick Orkin would put on this outfit, and sometimes he would be helicoptered in as Chicken Man and so on. And some wonderful promotions came out of that. Dick developed a character in Chicken Man that was called the Hummer. And so we set up this contest where if you heard anybody humming and you said, are you the Chicken Man Hummer or the WCFL Hummer, you could win. So we had people on buses, you know, stopping other people who would just happen to be innocently humming. It was just a wonderful one. And none of the other Amazon Ace or any of those other things that came out ever equaled the success of Chicken Man.
Now, WCFL Radio presents another exciting episode in the life of the most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known. In our last exciting episode, the wonderful white-winged warrior was summoned by his Uncle Sam.
Uncle Sam?
Will you stop calling me Dad?
Here in this questionnaire where it says childhood diseases, does beriberi count?
You had beriberi?
No, I didn't.
Then why put it down?
Well, it says list all childhood diseases you can remember alphabetically.
Never mind.
And I couldn't think of anything for under B.
Skip that part.
How about bubonic plague?
At ease.
Who's tense?
You see that door over there?
Oh, very well.
All right.
Left eye first. I see a P, then an S, and then I see a...
Forget your left eye.
Okay, right eye. I see a P, then an S, and then I also see... Are you going to put your fist in your mouth again? No, mustn't do. We had a hard time getting it out last time.
Go through that door.
What?
Go through that door.
Oh, okay. Hi. My Uncle Sam told me to come through this door.
Would you sit down, please?
Okay.
Boy, it's cold down here.
On a chair, please.
Oh, fine.
I am a psychiatrist.
How long has this been going on?
About 7 years.
Don't you think it's about time you see a doctor?
I have some questions here.
You too? I had a test out there.
I'd like you to answer them.
Oh, you ought to answer your own, because that'd be cheating, and I wouldn't
just
want
to... Just answer these yes or no.
Okay, but if we're found out...
Are you ready?
Yes or no.
Suppose we begin again.
Yes or no.
Would you wait?
Yes or no.
Stop.
Is that a question?
Just what's wrong with you?
That is, yes or no.
Oh, help me. Won't somebody help me?
Yes or no. Listen, I've had some bad experiences with people putting their whole hand in their mouth. So I wouldn't try to put your foot in.
Well, just why does everyone in the induction center manifest such a hostility? And another thing, if this keeps up, Chicken Man is doomed to be either rejected or given a reserve commission in special services. Be listening tomorrow as WCFL presents exclusively another exciting episode in the life of the most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
Came to me and asked if we could create a spoof on a spoof or a parody on a parody, and I created the concept of Chicken Man. I didn't do it all alone because at the time Jim Runyon was the morning man on the radio station, and although I was commissioned to create a superhero for all of the personalities on the station, Jim Runyon helped me create the concept of Chicken Man. So it was really Jane Roberts, who later became Mrs. Jim Runyon, and myself, who were involved in a daily basis in the Chicken Man series. I wrote the series in the morning. I came in about 9:30. And spent sometimes as long as 10 minutes writing the series, and on other occasions, maybe an hour, hour and a half. That was later in the series when I got stuck for ideas. Jane and Jim would help me figure out an ending for the series, and then more than that, Jim would do that announcer piece at the end that began with, "Well..." Those were fun days, and I had fun working with all of the wonderful personalities, some of whom I had worked with before at another radio station, but many of whom I met for the first time there.
Chicago is a WCFL of a town.
Blackhawks, the hockey team, are number one in their league. White Sox are leading the league. The Cubs are pushing. It's big league town. WCFL, that's big league too.
My house and my cat. My cat was born here. He talks like a Chicagoan. And I like WCFL.
My kind of town.
Brought up in the Midwest, I like the people in Chicago. So I feel very comfortable around them. I think the people, most of all. And WCFL.
And I'm going to mention the names of some of the jocks at CFL. How about a remembrance, okay? How about Joel Sebastian?
I will say this about lots of people, lots of the talent that I worked with, but Joel is one of my favorites also, and he was in the perfect slot, the perfect place, 9 to noon. People at work and housewives, and Joel had this great, sexy sound, and... was in California. I flew out and talked to him and hired him and brought him in. One of my favorite folks.
WCFL, WCFL, that's where it's at.
This is Sebastian, your man, reminding you. Your postmaster reminds you now is the time to mail Christmas packages to friends or relatives of the armed forces overseas. Assure on-time delivery of holiday overseas packages. Mail them before November 8. Well, now, honey, there's something I won't talk to you about. I want you to bring your little buddy right over here and sit down in my lap. Because your man is going to be looking for something. And I'll tell you something. I think you're well equipped.
First thing I think about when I think of WCFL 65 to 70 was the dedication of the staff at that radio station at that time. And the catalyst, of course, was Ken Draper, who was a program director with that unique ability to almost form a family of people who were on the staff. He was able to elicit from someone the best of their talent in terms of not only praise but critique, which I think is very important. Each personality at CFL at that time had a very distinctive personality, but it was under an umbrella of a total station sound, whether it was a promotion like Think Green, or whether it was because everybody had a Chicken Man or a Mini Spin in their show. There was a uniqueness that came through, whether it was Jim Runyon in the morning, or Dick Williamson, or Jim Stagg, Ron Britton, Barney Pipp, Larry Lou Jack, whatever it might be. They were allowed to express whatever they expressed, so long as they did it, and were also consistent with the rest of the station sound. So that would be my critical analysis of that radio station and what made it tick. And I do think it was a great radio station.
You are listening to WCFL. You are a wild child. You got a lot of cool. And you got a lot of smooth. You're alive. You're alert. You're a gal. WCFL, you have a mass of class.
Then, of course, the amazing Ron Britton.
Ron has his own planet, his own space that he goes to periodically, every night when he's on the air and when he was at CFL. And it's a kind of craziness, a kind of organized craziness is funny and strange all at the same time. I remember the first I'd heard Ron before I met him, and I couldn't believe they were the same person, because Ron in person is almost shy. You know, he's the kind of person who sits in his chair with his hands on his lap. And then he goes on the air, and another person comes out. You know, there's another Ron Britton somewhere. And he shows up, and this craziness goes on. One of the wonders of that show was we had, because of the contracts, although I don't believe this is a disadvantage, frankly, but engineers had to play everything. We weren't in a condition where the jock pushed buttons and ran his own or her own stuff. And to do things like the kinds of craziness and drops that Ron did, you have to really be married to that engineer. You have to be soulmates. And he was, and the two of them worked wonderfully together. And Ron and the engineer would drop things on Ron that he wasn't actually expecting or didn't know, but it always fit, it always worked. They were just they became one when that was happening.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Ron Britton Radio Program, WC for the Voice of Labor, King B, Ron Britton, America's first psychedelic disc jockey, well, with us from the Voice of Labor, ladies and gentlemen, the musical time done exactly now. Oh, my foot, it's 11:30.
WCFL.
Rex King! How come you didn't introduce me like you always do? Oh, Brittoni, you'll never do. Oh, my, I want to tell you, seen my girlfriend. She had her face lifted so many times, she talks through her nose. Well, she's got a fine nose, as noses run. There was beauty in her face, if you read between the lines. I'm not saying she's shy, but last week she served breast of chicken and had a sweater open. It was wonderful the way she never had dishpan hands. She washed the dishes with her feet. Oh, my, what is this? Give him one of my old Rex King yells.
The reason I felt that at that particular time it was so right for me was Draper had the concept of radio being theater, and that's exactly my perception of radio at that particular time, that I was playing a part, a role, and I went on stage and performed for the people. And that's what made it so easy, because when my time to go on the air came on, the jingle hit, it was just like the curtain going up and the stage lights going up on the for me. And I would come out and perform. I'd go crazy every night.
If it's going on, it's going on. WCFL, WCFL.
Any thoughts about Barney Pipp?
I don't even know how to explain Barney Pipp. He was a goofy guy again, I had heard when I was on a trip looking for talent when I was in Cleveland and liked him then, but didn't have any place for him. Called him when I went to Chicago. And, I mean, how do you explain a guy playing a trumpet, you know? But he also was knowledgeable about what he did. Barney Pipp knew his audience. He knew the music. He had a great sense when I had picked the wrong record. So it wouldn't be uncommon for me to have something that probably belonged in the morning rather than in Barney Pipp's show at night on that list. But Barney had an innate sense for what belonged there for his audience and which things he didn't want to touch or didn't want in there. And he would kind of say, I can't play this at night like that. Or he'd find a way to find a reason to play it that was funny, humorous, or that he could, and so on. But he had a great sense for that. He was really just a jock, and he was terrific.
Pip predicts for the coming year, 67. For my second prediction for this evening, for the year 1967, there'll always be an England and there'll never be another you.
Oh, give the little guy a chance.
Triangle Productions presents live on stage, Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. Yes, it's that magic south of the border sound of the swinginest musicians around. Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass.
Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass Affair Group, January 12th through the 18th at Harry Crown Theater. Tickets available at Cormac Place Box Office, Ticket Central, 212 North Michigan, and all Montgomery Ward and Crawford store.
WCFL!
Hello to Maria, Joy, Stephen, and Jackie. A is the Monkeys, abbreviation 8, and Coquette and Ken tonight, the Pit People in Action 21650. Hi to Linda and Diane.
Another jock that you hired for WCFL was Larry Lujack.
Larry Lujack was one of those people that I found on a listening safari. He was in Seattle, I believe, at the time I first heard him. Now I'm looking for an all-night person in Chicago, and I track him down. He's in Boston. I called him and flew him out and hired him to do all nights in Chicago at CFL, and that lasted about, a few months before LS. I hired him and put him on in drive time. And there was no, I certainly can't blame Larry for leaving all night to go to drive time on Ellis. But it was interesting for a while there was a kind of domino thing or checker thing going on. They hired Larry from us, and then I don't remember the exact order, but we hired Dex Card, who was their afternoon drive person, to work all nights. We also ultimately had Dick Biondi on WCFL. And so there was a period of time where there was a kind of trading going on. Our all-night people were being traded, leaving us to go to better time slots at LS. And people were coming to CFL.
Larry Lujack remembers.
Well, when I first came to Chicago, CFL was my first job in this city. And prior to my coming, they had an all-night jazz show. The station at that time was rock and roll up until midnight. At midnight, it turned into a jazz station with Yvonne Daniels and Sid McCoy. I remember the first night I was on, they had me, for the first couple of weeks I was doing the all-night thing, playing all oldies. And this jazz show was very popular. I mean, all the cab drivers and hookers in the city, I think, listened to it. And the first night I went on, I remember getting all kinds of calls from very irate people saying, you know, what is this Ricky Nelson garbage? You know, where's Errol Garner? And so it got so bad that after about 10 minutes, I stopped answering the phone because everybody was, all the jazz fans were shocked and outraged. So we did that for a couple of weeks, and then we just switched over to the regular rock and roll. I was only there for about 4 months the first time, and then WLS offered me a job doing afternoon drive, so then I came over here for about 5 years and then went back over to CFL for another 4 years, and now I'm back over here. And who knows, by next week I could be back at CFL.
WCFL.
So how were you able to manage this amazing group of crazy, talented people?
Every week, every Tuesday night, and this is Chicago, this is not Peoria, where you're 5 minutes away from home. That talent group met with me every Tuesday night, period. It didn't matter how long they'd been in the air, what else was going on in their lives. No one ever got excused. No one could ever say, you know, my wife wants to go shopping tonight. Didn't work. They met with me, all of them, every Tuesday night to talk about what we were promoting, to talk about drop-ins, throwaways, and so on. Then they also met with me once a week, each one of them individually, to review, to critique their shows, you know, talk about it. Listen, didn't matter how long they'd been there. Ron Britton, we'd go over that show, even though it was 2 or 3 years into it, and talk about what wasn't tight, what didn't belong, what wasn't funny, and so on. And so these guys worked, you know, they worked very hard at what they did. This group of talent is, in my career, was the group of talent. They could do anything. They were terrific. They were basically decent human beings as well. It was a great a group of talent. And they tend to get whatever it was I was trying to do, including Chicken Man and those kinds of things. Absolutely great.
You had all this creative talent working for you and carte blanche to do what you want, but you were up against a formidable competitor with WLS.
When we went there, WLS was the station, and they got all of the business. If an act was coming in, LS was going to get that act. Frank Fried was the big promoter in Chicago, and he brought 90% of all of those shows in. So if the Beatles were coming, Frank was going to be the promoter for the Beatles, and LS was going to be the station whose jocks were going to show up, because the jocks were invited because the promoter wanted all of that promotion, on free promotion on the air. And so when we went there, WLS was the station. As a matter of fact, having gone through the Beatle experience in Cleveland, now comes Jim and Jim Runyon and other people from Cleveland, and we're going through it all over again. LS is going to get the Beatles in the second tour coming to Chicago, and they're going to be at White Sox Stadium. But if you remember, WCFL used to carry the White Sox. And so we had an in at the stadium, and we put our jocks in the broadcast booth, the White Sox broadcast booth at the stadium. And as the show was going on, we carried everything with the music. So you could be there, if you will, as a reporter. We're entitled there to listen and to report, so you can hear the crowd and hear the announcements and people talking. But we're not permitted to play the music. So we just played the music from the studio. So we simulated the concert, even though it belonged to the bus. Well, Frank Fried was responsible for that. And shortly after that, Frank came to CFL and said, would your jocks do, you know, whatever. And the Stones and the Beach Boys and Mamas and Papas, those were shows he was bringing in and going on at them. The first time that happened, he asked if the jocks would do it, and I said they would be happy to. And I didn't say they'd be happy to do it for $500 a piece or for any amount of money. In my head at the time, we were coming out of the toilet. I mean, we were trying to catch this giant WLS, and to have broken that ice and get a concert where our jocks are going to be there, wouldn't you do that for free? But I had a small rebellion on my hands, and somebody came to me and said, hey, you know, the jocks are not happy because you're asking them to do the show, and they know that the LS jocks get paid, and they think maybe you should have negotiated something for them. And I was angry. I got really angry. So I said, okay, send in the jocks one at a time. Start with Pip. In bounces Barney, kind of goofy walk of his, and he says, and he was the first one I talked to, so I was, he got the brunt of, you know, of this whole burst of anger with my logic or lack of it. You know, are you guys crazy? I mean, what's the matter with you? We're struggling. We're trying to make this thing. And so Barney went back to the jocks' room, and I didn't have to talk to anybody else. Barney explained it to them, and he came back and said, it's okay. So in turn, Frank bought everybody a new suit. He sent them over to a tailor and said, get a suit made. But we had a small rebellion on our hands. It took them a moment to get how fortunate they were to be able to do that.
I understand that you had a WCFL VIP room at the station where the audience could meet the jocks.
We were in the Marina City Towers in Chicago, the radio station was, which was a great new landmark in Chicago. And because the union was so prominent in its building and in their headquarters being there, we had access to all kinds of rooms and other facilities. So we created a VIP room where listeners and fans of the jocks could come meet jocks. We actually could fill that room with just a jock. We would also bring periodically talent, would stop by and sign autographs and so on. But it would be open regularly and come to the WCL VIP room. But these guys were so good and were developing such a response that we could actually fill that room with just the talent, with just a jock, you know, Jim Stagg showing up or whatever. It was a terrific, terrific period.
The late Gene Taylor was the manager of WLS at that time. What was his reaction to your guerrilla warfare with the Beatles and the fact that you stole acts away from WLS?
Unhappy, of course. And the coincidentally, he lived two blocks from me. We both lived in a suburb of Chicago. And I didn't know that when I moved in, but I used to drive by his house. He was two blocks away from me on my way to work at CFL all the time. And we never talked, ever, never spoke. I didn't like him. I didn't even know him. I didn't like him because I'm competitive. And now time passes, and I leave CFL, and Gene leaves WLS, and I meet him on a plane, and we became friends. And he's a really nice guy, of course. But at that time, I didn't want to talk to anybody, and it was incredibly competitive. Record people were choosing sides, you know, and they were stuck. Record people were. This was a difficult period for them to decide how to get an exclusive record to anybody because they didn't want to alienate LS or us in the process. But they would nonetheless, it would be sort of like, okay, Ken, but we'll get you the next one. You know? But in those days, it was so competitive that if WLS had an exclusive on the air, we would tape it instantly. And the part where it says WLS exclusive, we would tape, we would cut in WCFL. We actually used a short part of our jingle and put it in over the top of theirs. And it would be, about 6 hours later that we'd get a cease and desist order from an attorney. And that would come later in the evening, and so I wouldn't actually get it until, you know, 9 or 10 the next day. And actually, by the time we'd gotten through that whole process, the record is out and broken. But that's how competitive it was at that time. Anyway, Gene and I lived nearby. He was a nice guy. And they were not happy that we were getting those shows. They weren't happy that we were taping their exclusives. They weren't happy that some record promoters were giving us things first. Of course, they'd been there for years, and no one ever had competed with them. So it was a new experience for them.
Programmer John Rook commented that when he arrived in Chicago in 1967, WCFL had cleaned WLS's clock.
We ultimately beat them in some time slots, but there was no thing where we ever dominated. That didn't happen. We were competitive with them, and John became a partner of mine and Chuck Flores for a while. So I know John, and he said once, anything that was happening, it always showed up on CFL right away, which was the whole goal, our whole goal. His point was, it was hard for anyone to beat us on what was going on. As the jingle said, if it's going on, in Chicago, it's going on WCFL. If Gordie Howe is trying to break the record, it was there. If a new record is out, we were involved. If the Beatles were coming to town one way or another, we were going to be in on it. So it was hard to be more timely than we were, or to be more Chicago than CFL was.
Last but not least, when you think of WCFL, the imaging that stands out in your mind are those incredible WCFL jingles that were really like mini songs.
The jingles were done by Chuck Bloor and were an important part of our success as well. And you couldn't get along with, you couldn't survive today with jingles as long as those were, although I am convinced that you could do more than 5 second jingles and have them be more meaningful. But at that time, we were looking at jingles as songs and not as glue, or not as glue to hold pieces together, or as separators. It was my opinion that every single thing that comes out of the speaker at a radio station should have meaning. It should have a purpose for it being there. Nothing is just because you have to do it. Nothing is, if the FCC tells you you have to do X minutes of public service, you don't just stick it on all night and waste the time or use up the time. Every single thing that you do needs to be meaningful. And so I wanted the jingles to be songs. I wanted them to be hits in your head, things you could not forget, words that you couldn't forget. And the lyrics to the jingles were, after Chuck and I talked about it, were written principally by Chuck, but they were about Chicago. You couldn't use them anywhere else, those lyrics. Those lyrics were about Chicago. It wasn't something that you could just change the call letters and put them somewhere else. So you would find people humming them. You would find people calling and asking, would you play the pledge jingle? Would you play the, we pledge allegiance to the...
WCFL, now we proudly pledge allegiance to the station that we love, to the friend that we depend on, we sing the praises of WCFL. WCFL, we'll be true to you forever, forever and a day, in this lovely land of Lincoln, wherever people play.
Those songs, those jingles, became an important part of CFL and what we did as well. It was also when I came out here, came out to Los Angeles with Chuck to do those. I was amazed. I mean, it was wonderful to walk in to the sessions for those jingles and see Glenn Campbell and Stan Getz playing as studio musicians on those sessions, or the Johnny Mansingers. I mean, they'd had a few album hits of their own. It's terrific talent doing my jingles. Isn't that wonderful? But there was some great talent also used on that on those songs.
A groovy chick, a cheetah, a slap shot by Makita, a roaring, boring hour on the air. Losing your umbrella and cruising the Wendella, as much a part of Chicago as joint on Well Street. The tie-up when the bottles no fall there. A rhubarb by DeRocher, a
of Chicago as WCFL.
When the sun turns out his light and calls it a night, when the moon begins to listen, it's the perfect time to listen to WCFL, the perfect way to end the day. WCFL.
There's a paucity of east-west animosity.
The element's ferocity, a gentle wind's velocity.
An act of generosity, a kindness or atrocity.
The budget's ponderosity, the Senate's dubiosity.
A record's luminosity, a master's virtuosity.
Political ferocity, with all its nebulosity.
A gifted child's precocity, a movie star's pomposity.
A wild impetuosity, an endless curiosity.
Special thanks to Ken Draper for joining us today on Radio Recall. We will get together with some more of this interview next time as Ken talks about the days before CFL and also the days after when he went on to do consulting work for stations like WPIX and KFWB in Los Angeles. Thanks for joining us. It's Jim Hampton on Radio Recall.
Airchecks.com.